The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Exciting news! October sees the launch of the world's first live healthy breakfast show right here on UK Health Radio. Presented by the amazing Dr. Shan Hussein every weekday from 7 till 9 a.m. Also live streamed via YouTube and available on UK Health Radio's Listen on Demand for our global audience. Start your day the healthy way.
Recovery Today on UKHealthRadio.com. Join me and my guests on this voyage of recovery and discovery.
Well, hello everyone. Hi, my name is Jim Smith and welcome to Recovery Today. Well, as in all my shows, I've got a friend who I'm going to talk with today. His name is Brian Hayes, and I haven't known Brian that long as some of my guests, but there's a wonderful thing about, you know, Brian's life at the moment. He was 5 years in recovery about a week ago, wasn't it, Brian?
Yeah, last Saturday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this is, you know, it's a kind of, we do celebrate birthdays in recovery. So it's 5 years. It's quite a milestone. But look, Brian, let's... I know you're an Irish, you're born in Ireland. Well, I assume you were born in Ireland. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about your beginnings and where you grew up? And, you know?
Sure. I was born in Limerick, Jim, 1960.
Yeah.
And I grew up there. I was educated well. I went to an Irish school.
Yeah.
Primary school, all speaking Irish. Oh. Then I went to a Jesuit secondary school.
Yeah.
And after that, I went to University of Limerick to study engineering. And I stuck with that and got it.
You got your degree?
I got my degree in engineering. Never used it.
No.
But they say an education is never wasted. You know,
No.
I believe that.
Yes.
And I left Ireland pretty much immediately after that in 1981 and came over here. Mm. The punk rock scene started at about the same time as I went to university.
Yes, it
and,
did.
As you know, I'm a guitarist, the same as you these days.
Yes.
And I was then as well.
But
punk rock actually pretty much changed my life at that time.
Mm.
Whether it was for better or worse, I don't know. But I came over here with the idea that I'm going to take a year out.
Mm.
And that's exactly what I did, came here, and I was just about to go back thinking, well, I've done that. I should go home and get a good job and make my parents happy. That's the kind of family I came from.
Yes,
I can't blame my problems in life on anything to do with my childhood or dysfunction or anything like that.
Brian, can I just go back a bit before you come? Yeah, about your family. Have you got any siblings?
I've got one brother, one sister.
Yeah. Oh, you have?
Mm-hmm.
And are they in England now?
They're both in Ireland.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
And your mum's still in Ireland?
My mum is.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. No, I just wanted to get that one, yeah. Mm-hmm. So your early memories and your upbringing, your schooling, you know, were fairly, comfortable.
Yes, pretty much, you know, but of course in recovery, a lot gets revealed.
It does, doesn't it?
I'm sure that plenty more will be to will be revealed.
Yes,
the kind of child I was a person that was going to have problems with addiction from birth, because there's a lot of it on one side of the family, on my father's side of the family.
Yes,
neither of my parents.
No,
but all on my father's side, there was severe alcoholism, gambling, drug addiction.
Oh, right,
and a lot of the siblings have it as well.
Yeah,
and, I'm one of those, so.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm also one of the lucky ones in recovery now.
Yes, that's right. But did any of your family members on your dad's side, did they get well? Did they get recovery?
Yeah, I had an uncle called Joe, actually. And,
yes.
I knew him as a sober person, but I always remember my mother saying to me as a child, I don't know how often she said it can't have been often, but it's only in recovery I remember her saying, you're as odd as two left feet.
Yes.
You're just like your Uncle Joe. I didn't take it as an insult or anything. That's the kind of kid I was. I wasn't that sensitive about things like that.
Yeah.
But it struck me in recovery, and I knew my uncle, as I say, as a sober person in recovery, and he actually taught me to drive. And I remember thinking what incredible patience he had. Not that I was a bad student or anything, but I couldn't equate that with the stories I'd heard of his
drinking.
And in fact, he went to a same fellowship that I go to now.
So
there's a sort of a
interesting
continuity.
Yeah,
I think about him a lot. You know,
has he passed away now?
Yeah, he died quite a few years ago now. I can't even quite remember how.
But he died sober.
He died sober.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay, so let's get back to when you came over here. How old were you then when you first came to the mainland?
Well, I was young and a big drinker, but not a daily drinker.
No.
But I drank, I mean, the culture as well in Ireland, all my friends as well. I mean, as soon as we were teenagers, the first thing we did was things like robbing orchards, then jumping trains.
Yes.
kid type things.
Yeah.
And as soon as you possibly could get served in a pub, the thing was that was your rite of passage that you were able to drink in a pub.
Yeah, and, of course.
But
prior
to that, we would get drunk anyway. And the idea was always to get drunk. So that was kind of the way it was. But it was always like that for me anyway, you know. Beyond that phase, it never occurred to me that it might be a nice idea to have one pint in the, on a summer's day or anything. I always... drank for the effect. And
yes, I was going to ask you that. You said there's as many reasons for drinking as people drinking, but you know, some people state other, you know, different reasons. But did you like yourself sober? Were you comfortable in your own skin?
I can't say I was. I can say one thing for certain in recovery. When I look back, what I always remember are periods of my life where things were going very well. And I have been a very lucky fella in so many ways. You know, a lot of things fell in my lap that people, you know, and I literally took them for granted.
Yeah.
But it would be pointed out to me sometimes that I didn't appreciate anything. And I really knew that. I felt nothing was ever good enough.
Yeah.
I was very... very critical, very negative, and even when I knew that I should be happy with where I am at, and I am lucky, what is wrong with me type thing used to vaguely enter my head. It's only in recovery when I look back that really from the age of 17 and younger when I started drinking up to when I came into recovery, alcohol and other substances were always there, always, you know, to begin with, a lot, and then daily, and then to take over my life for quite a long time. And so it's only in recovery that I have the clarity to look back and say, well, this is obviously why I did those things. I had no concept
inside
of that at that time.
No. You mentioned music. I know music's important to you, as it is to me. And did you start playing in Ireland?
I did, yeah.
What, the guitar?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the punk era. That was obviously current when you started playing.
Yeah, well, I played before punk came along, and there was a kind of, you know, I would have been into Tangerine Dream, Eagles, all sorts of things prior to punk. But I remember it was a Sunday night, and I think it was 1978, and myself and my friend, and he was like the first punk in Limerick.
Yeah,
and we went to see a band called the Buzzcocks.
Oh yeah, I remember them. Yeah,
in the Savoy in Buzzcocks, Limerick, and it absolutely blew me away. You know, and I thought, wow. And then he started playing. My friend actually was the one that introduced me to it.
Yeah.
Prior to that, we listened to all types, but this was the new thing. When I saw that band, I thought, wow, I can play that kind of stuff. Then I heard their album, and I started playing along to their album, and what I had learned already, that I could play this stuff very easily, but I loved the attitude, I loved everything about it, and of course it was to feed into what was wrong with me anyways
in
regards of self-will run riot, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting, Brian. I identify with that playing along, because when I started learning guitar, it wasn't the Buzzcocks for me, because it was a generation before, you know. I was playing along to the Shadows and the Ventures and people like that. So
yeah,
we all do it in the same way. So yeah, then talk us through what happened then. You did you get into a band locally, or?
Well, I actually tried many times in Ireland. There's always been a kind of a seeking for an elusive musical partner. Yeah. God has other plans, as they say sometimes, you know. That never kind of happened. And I came over here and I just thought, I'll try and form a band. I'll get into one that already exists.
Yeah.
And like I say, I almost gave up. And the night before I was due to go back, I met this guy that I'd met, and he mentioned a band called Angelic Upstarts. We're looking for a guitar player for an American tour. And so I stopped everything, met the singer, got on well with him, and joined him on the spot, near enough. Bass player came around the singer's flat, asked me to do a solo. I did a kind of a bluesy type thing, but I knew my punk at this stage.
Yeah.
Don't put too many notes in.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was hired on the spot, and a week later I was touring America.
Wow. I mean, that is that is a success story in that sense.
Yeah.
But that was very instant, wasn't it? Your opportunity with the Angelic Upstarts. But this is a good time now, Brian, to bring your first choice of music to the listeners, which is really not that punky. It's Joni Mitchell, isn't it? Both Sides Now. Why have you chosen this?
Well, I love Joni Mitchell beforehand and during and afterwards and everything anyway, as I do lots of other music.
Yeah.
And I just love those lyrics. Generally, I think you know me a bit. I'm not that huge of a lyrics type guy. I'm more of a tunes man.
And that's right, melodies and tunes,
But I love the lyrics of that.
Yeah.
And I believe she was only 24 or something when she wrote that. And even now, when you said you have to choose three songs, of course, how difficult is that?
Yeah.
I thought, well, I must choose a Joni Mitchell one. And I still can't believe that someone that age wrote lyrics like that.
Do you know what? It's like Bob Dylan, when his first four albums and the songs on there that were kind of almost divinely inspired or came from a power greater than him. And it's similar with Joni Mitchell, isn't it? Yeah.
Absolutely, it's incredible.
Okay, well, let's play this wonderful song. Joni Mitchell, Both Sides Now.
Ice cream castles in the air and feather canyons everywhere. I've looked at clouds that weave, but now they only block the sun. They rain and snow on everyone. So many things I would have done, got in my way. I've looked at clouds from both sides now, come up and down, and still somehow it's cloud illusions. I recall, I really don't know clouds at all. Love that we, but now it's just another show. You leave them laughing when you go, and if you care, don't let them know. Don't give your myself away. I've looked at love from both sides now, from give and take, and still somehow it's love's illusions I recall. I really don't know love at all. Tears and fears and feeling proud to say I love you right out loud. Dreams and schemes and circus crowds, looked at life that way. But now old friends are acting strange. They shake their heads, they say I've changed. Well, something's lost, but something's gained in living every day. I've looked at life from both sides now, somehow it's life's illusions I recall. I really don't know life at all. I've looked at life from both sides now,
That was Joni Mitchell with Both Sides Now, a fantastic song. And as you said, Brian, the lyrics are wonderful, considering she was, you know, early 20s. And that's been covered by so many people, hasn't it, that song?
Has it?
Oh, yeah. Judy Collins, I think, made a hit with it. And it's just a very, very kind of, yeah, beautiful song. So, okay, so let's get back to this incredible experience. So, you obviously got on well with the band, and they offered you, you said, join us for a tour of America. So what did you say?
Absolutely. Well, I equate it, it's like winning the lottery. I mean, these days it's not that huge a deal to get on a plane to go across to America.
No, but
back in 1981, which it was for me, it really was. I mean, yeah. It was my dream come true. I just wanted to be in a band and make a noise.
Sure, yeah.
To actually tour around America at that time. Wow. And I joined actually a second guitar player, but shortly after the original guitar player left, leaving just myself.
Wow.
And I carried on for 21 years playing that
Did
band.
You? As long as yeah. that with them? Wow.
Yeah, up until 2002.
Yeah. And how many albums did you record with them? I suppose you must have.
I can't remember now.
Quite a few, yeah, it must have been.
Six or seven, yeah. I suppose, something like that, yeah.
And they had a following, was it mainly in America or Europe? It was.
Well, at that time, punk rock was very short-lived in this country.
It was, yeah.
But in other countries around the world, and Europe, Eastern Europe, places like that, it was taken off in various times in different places, you know. The kind of band we were the singer wrote from a very socialist, left-leaning point of view. You know, he would write about specific places and so wherever.
Yeah.
A lot of times we'd be invited to play there, like for instance Poland. We had a big song called Solidarity.
Oh, really? Left Windsor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so while it was in England, we might not be playing to many people. We could play in somewhere like Yugoslavia or East Germany, and parts of America to big crowds, you know. So
wow.
Mm. So
yes.
Although here we'll say, this is the type of person I was. Maybe I would have thought in my mind, I'm not really in the coolest band, you know. That's what I mean. What was wrong with me? Like,
yeah,
I could have chosen any lots of other bands I'd rather be in, because that would might be cooler.
Mm. Yeah.
The Angelic Upstarts wasn't quite cool enough. I'm ashamed to say it, and I'm glad at this stage, and I have been for a long time actually. I'm proud to have been in them.
Yes, you
know? But at that time I was a kind of arty type punk.
Yes, yeah.
And how do I find myself in this band, even though it's fantastic? I found myself kind of justifying it to a lot of my arty type friends.
Yes.
So that type of thing is about comfortable in your skin.
Yeah.
That sort of thing doesn't exist anymore. Back then, it kind of would.
But it was your attitude, wasn't it? It was like my attitude when I was drinking. Mm. It was so bad, my attitude, you know. I remember seeing Donovan. I was a young man, and Donovan was playing on the television. And I was living with my parents at the time. I was like 18, and I was shouting at the television. And my dad said, "What's wrong, son?" I said, "This is what's wrong. I'm better than him." Pointing a finger at Donovan. And my dad said, in his calm, spiritual way, he said, "Well, that may be so, son, but he's up there on the BBC doing it, and you're shouting at him in a little house in West Croydon. So, you know, if you want to be like him, go out and do the work." And I hated my dad for that. But of course he was right.
Yeah.
He was right.
I know that attitude exactly, and very similar to myself.
Yeah, there's sometimes we talk about altered attitudes, don't we, in recovery?
Oh, yeah.
So that is a heck of a long time you were with that band.
Uh-huh.
Your drinking obviously didn't, well, it, did it progress whilst you were over the years with the band? Or?
It did. Funnily enough, or oddly enough, you might think of punk rock as in sort of a, you know, anything goes, but we weren't that type of band.
No.
I can honestly say I was only drunk on stage once.
Wow.
But obviously after shows.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
And, you know, being in a band is only one part of your life.
I was going to say that. Well, you obviously came home in between.
Tours and I met my wife in 1984, which is just a few years after being in the band as well.
Yes.
And we got married in 1990.
Right.
And if anything, it wasn't so much to me being a musician or anything like that. It was real life that caused my problems to escalate.
Yes.
And everything I've learned in recovery was a flight from responsibility,
fear
of responsibility.
Sure.
I wouldn't run from them, but if generally if things went wrong, an adult needed to be around.
Mm.
And so it was hard to
be
kind of, you know, in a band half the time where it was pretty much every man for himself, and it was self-will run riot, and you had to learn to look after yourself and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Then back to a stable, kind of very, very stable family life. I had a fantastic wife.
Yes. Yeah.
But again, you know, why was that not good enough? What was wrong with me that I couldn't, I couldn't appreciate what I had?
Yes. Yeah.
And I was aware of that. I did have that awareness.
Sure, yeah.
That why do I always think something that the grass is greener somewhere else?
Mm, yeah.
But I didn't think much beyond it.
No.
But, you know, it became, on a daily basis, my coping mechanism for just dealing with life, and especially responsibility when our daughter was born.
Yes.
Was alcohol, and subsequently when that stopped working, other substances, and and that was what kept me going right up until it stopped working. And unfortunately, after that, my wife died in 2003, my best friend died. A lot of other things happened. Those are not the I'm quick to say are not the things that caused me what I am. As I say, I believe I was born it, but they're very symptomatic of person that can't handle like trauma
sometimes, Brian, I think we, you know, too hard on ourselves. So that kind of loss is enormous for anyone, you know, really. And grief, I know for me, it's not over. People are individuals and they manage or experience loss in unique ways. But it's quite something. But obviously you're in recovery now, and that's when the process really, I know for me, began, true grief. And but your daughter, I've seen her today, she's a teacher, isn't she?
She's a teacher now.
In her late 20s? Yeah.
She's 27.
Fantastic.
She was 10 when her mum died.
Yeah.
And so it was just like the two of us.
Yes.
And I clung to her as much as she clung to me. We were more like best friends than anything.
Yes. That's right. I understand that.
In a way, it was like two children, you know. I just happened to be the one that...
Oh, yeah.
that drove her to school, etc. But the enormous strain of the responsibility. I stopped doing everything, music, everything. I literally became a stay-at-home parent just to look after my daughter.
Yes, yeah. I mean, I haven't had an immense loss like that. However, when my marriage finished, my 13-year-old daughter, I've got three daughters, they were all born since I've been in recovery, but Melanie came to live with me. She said, I'm not living with another man. She said, Dad, my dad is my dad. And she came to live with me. Yeah. And exactly like you just said, we were like two children, really. And she sometimes was the adult in the relationship.
Yeah. It's still like that with myself and Honor.
That's right.
Sometimes.
And now my daughter's 36 in a couple of weeks, and she's got four children. But, you know, things have changed. But yeah, okay. So I'm going to introduce this second. Well, I'm not going to introduce it. I want you to talk about it, because I admit I've vaguely heard of Magazine, but. I don't really know their music, but you've chosen a track by a band called Magazine, Shot by Both Sides. Can you say a little bit about the band?
Well, Howard Devoto was the singer of Magazine, and he was actually an original member of the Buzzcocks. He left the Buzzcocks and formed this band called Magazine, who had a guy called John McGeoch. Was their guitar player, and he was like my favorite guitar player of all the punk type guitar players. I likened myself to him if I could have been so bold.
Yes,
but I really did, you know. And
I
thought he was an amazing guitar player. Unfortunately, I went to see Magazine many times. Like I said to you, which band might I like to have been in? It would have been a band would like Magazine.
Like them,
John apparently, or unfortunately as well, had issues with alcohol, and he never got as far as recovery. He died some years ago. I don't believe he reached 50. So
no,
but you know, when you asked me to pick three songs, I thought I would definitely pick a Magazine one. And
I'm glad you have.
Yeah,
let's listen to it now. This is Magazine with Shot by Both Sides.
Just what's real, what I've given to understand is exactly what I steal. I went my way into the heart of a crowd, went my way into the heart of a crowd. I was shocked to find what was allowed. I didn't lose my soul in the crowd. Shots, battle signs.
Well, that was Magazine, and the track was Shot by Both Sides. Yeah, as I said to you just now, Brian, you know, I don't really know their music, so I'll definitely give them a listen, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we also spoke, didn't we, just now, about how many, the percentage of, like, musicians and artists who, you know, fall foul of addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's quite significant, anyway, yeah. Well, Brian, if you could just tell the listeners about the end, you know, what happened at the end. I'm always fascinated by, you know, people's stories, and then something happened, and it's always slightly different with every person. So what was it in your case?
Well, as I said, it led me to other substances as well, but I knew I was in trouble with it. I knew I had no defense against doing those things. I was doing it to cope with the responsibility, the grief, the loss, what I had and lost, all of that type of thing. And I quit one thing after another, right until I was just with alcohol, and instead of being able to even vaguely cut down on that, it seemed like as if that was trying to make up for the lack of everything else.
Yeah.
Except for it had originally stopped working anyway.
Mm.
But I had no way to stop. And I just couldn't. It began with the odd cycle of drinking round the clock. I would get myself together for a while. My daughter was away at university and traveling.
Oh, right.
And I didn't have the discipline of.
No. No.
Nothing to stop me.
That's right.
You know, apart from willpower, which we know is not much use to us when we suffer from this thing.
No.
And so by the end, I was in this terrible place where I couldn't live with it. I couldn't imagine life without
it. That's right, yeah.
And I was drinking against my will.
Yeah.
Getting more and more physically ill, mentally gone a bit insane for sure. What I subsequently was to learn, which I really am glad I identified with, was that I spiritually completely broken.
Yeah.
And so I was in the darkest of places, and, you know, it's pointless even going into that. So many people in addiction end up in that place.
Yes,
and,
yeah.
Very, very fortunate to live long enough just about to get into a treatment center.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which was where my journey began, but it was when I came out from that treatment center, detoxed, etc., and that I knew I needed something else.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was when, extremely, I feel completely blessed that I went to 12-step fellowships, I recognized that I suffered from a spiritual malady, which I'm certain was what I was like as a child, when my mother used to say, "You're as odd as the opal, as two left feet."
Yeah, I used to get comments like that. Yeah,
you know, why was nothing ever good enough? Why did I have such a bleak worldview?
Yeah,
why did I not appreciate things that I knew were good?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So it made absolute sense to me that I needed a spiritual recovery.
Yeah.
And so I sought out, or they were made known to me. And I went to them, and I met you at one of those.
Yeah, we met in one of those places, those meetings. It was amazing. That was in central London, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I love that about this kind of fellowship, because, you know, I love it. I mean, we just meet people, and sometimes we meet a lot. We just meet people, and it's fine just to do that. But other times, like this, it becomes, you know, a real friendship.
Absolutely, yeah.
And now, tell the listeners this, Brian, it wouldn't matter if he was in a punk band, but he's not. He doesn't play punk now. He plays acoustic guitar like me, and we play similar. We've played together, and probably will in the future. And in fact, we're going to have a little jam session after this recording. So, but just say, you know, just review the last 5 years, you know, and...
Well, the last 5 years, I'd say, Jim, that the first year, it's 5 years since my last drink. My first year in recovery was one of relapse. I managed to get to 6 months, relapsed, and I did the following month.
Mm.
I was working the steps as best I could, but I had to reach that point where I had needed to have a psychic change and a spiritual awakening, just as it was described to me. Yeah. If I was to do these 12 steps, it would create the conditions for a power greater than myself, which I fully was open to do for me what I just couldn't do myself. And I stuck with it long enough for that moment to arrive. It did arrive, and from that moment, everything changed. Year on year, it has gotten more profound, deeper. To me, it's they describe it as a gift, and I do honestly view it that way. For me, it's a second chance at life.
Yes, most definitely.
I wake up in the morning being glad to be alive, and I have the appreciation of something that that I've heard you say, the magnificence of the ordinary. When I heard you saying that, I thought that that is it. And I do. I just wanted to be able to feel normal again, but the new normal in recovery is not like my old normal. And so it's an ongoing thing on a daily basis, of course. But it's a chance to get to a way of living, to get to do life the right way. And, you know, I'm approaching 60 years of age next year. I'm 58 now. I'm 59
next year.
And I actually look forward, like we say, like a normal person should do. That my, you know, I'm not terrified of life. All I wanted to do was to not drink and use stuff. But instead, I'm learning all about how to actually live a useful life. And I do now appreciate when things are good. And I have a solution when my perception is that they're not.
And you're a sober parent today?
I'm a sober parent. Myself and my daughter have a fantastic relationship.
And a son, sober son to your mum?
I have a son that unfortunately...
No. Well, yeah, yeah, sorry. I say you are a sober son, but you do have a son.
Of course. I have a son in Manchester who I don't see so often. There are things in recovery that... strangely enough don't kind of work out, but the way we live,
that's right,
we're always willing, things can change, you never know what's around the corner.
Well, I vouch for that with my it's a story that the listeners have probably heard me say before, but you know, a few years ago, just over two years ago I found my family, my family in Ireland.
It's incredible.
I've been looking on and off for like 40 years. So some things take whatever they take.
Fantastic.
So, you know, in that 5 years, Brian, things have, it's a completely new dimension, isn't it?
Absolutely.
You're there, you're responsible, you're present, you know. And also, you're a very fine guitarist, I must tell the listeners that. And... but also, you have a wonderful trade. You were showing me some photos recently of your work.
I'd
like to say a little bit about that, because I think it's really wonderful what you do with that.
Yeah, there's an old art in brickwork called tuck pointing.
That's it.
That's what I do.
Yeah.
I'm doing that at the moment.
Yeah.
As we know, there's not much money in music.
Not a lot.
I view music as a gift, the same way as I view recovery. And
that's right.
To me, it's a joy to be able to play the type of music that we play and to play with people such as yourself. To actually make a living. That's what I do these days.
That's right.
And you know, I used to resent the fact that I had to do things like that, because really, I'm a musician, and I should have enough money and all of these things. Exactly. And recovery has given me the appreciation of, well, aren't I lucky that I can do this?
Yeah. Yes, that's right.
It doesn't matter that I have a degree, I never use any, all those things do not matter. The person I was would see everything in a negative way.
Yeah, that's it.
Even if I didn't act it, or even if I didn't sometimes say it, that was my sort of worldview. Now, do you know, as we practice the things we practice in recovery, a lot of things just take care of themselves.
They do.
As you say, attitudes, just you find one day that they've altered in a positive way. It's incredible. You know?
That's very true. That is very, mystical, very true. Yeah. Mm. We find, you know, I know I've found over the time, over the years, that things just get embodied in my soul, and I kind of find myself thinking and acting the ways I couldn't dream about. But yeah, it becomes the norm.
Mm-hmm.
Becomes the norm. Well, look, this is this has been a wonderful half an hour or whatever it's been. It's fascinating. I always find with these interviews, you know, for this show, that I think I know someone who's a friend of mine, and then we do one of these and a couple of things come up during the interview and I didn't know that. And it's anyway, it's and we've got Brian's last choice of music, which is very, very appropriate, the title. It's something I love. I love Lindsey Buckingham. I love his playing. I love this track. But let's play out with this, Brian, but tell the listeners what your last choice of music is.
Yeah, well, it's a tune that has the style of guitar playing that we both play, and yeah. I'm not sure if it was meant to be a recovery song.
No.
But I view it that way, and I love to play it, and I believe we'll probably play it in a few minutes.
Well, we will, and I know one thing. I don't think you're ever going back, are you?
No.
I'm definitely not going back, so we're both never going back, so Fleetwood Mac...
Fleetwood Mac, Never Going Back.
Never Going Back.
She broke down and let me in. Made me see where I've been.
Thank you for listening, everyone, and join me next time. Here's the number of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is a fellowship for anyone who has a drinking problem. The number is 0800 917 7650. That's 0800 917 7650. The number of Narcotics Anonymous, this is a fellowship for anyone who has a drug problem. That's from 10 a.m. till midnight. The number is 0300 999 1212. 0300 999 1212. And finally, Al-Anon, which is a fellowship to support family and friends of the alcoholic. It's from 10 a.m. till 10 p.m. The number is 0207 403 0888. That's 0207 403 0888.